Oates, and I'm a junior political science and English major at UVM. I'm also the president of the Lawrence Debate Union, and we're here in the Lawrence Debate Union Debate Office, which is an intercollegiate debate team that travels regionally and internationally. And I'm here with David Madland. Before he debates the question, is income inequality a threat to our democracy? For the event hosted by the Janus Forum at UVM, the Janus Forum is dedicated to the proposition that society benefits from constructive debate. So just basically, I guess, for my first question, could you just tell me a little bit about yourself, your work, research, and professional background?
Sure. I work at a think tank called the Center for American Progress. I'm a senior fellow there. I started off working in politics. Like, I worked for a member of Congress for a while. I worked for some advocacy organizations. Then I went and got my PhD. So now I've been at a think tank for over a decade, and it's sort of a nice balance between the academic research and then the political debate. It's sort of a hybrid between the two, which is a nice home for me. And the kinds of work I get to do, I tend to focus on domestic economy and the relationship between the economic and political systems. So there's particularly questions like the effects of inequality on democracy.
Mm-hmm. So in, like, reading about your work before you came here, you talk a lot about the middle class. Do you want to just elaborate on sort of your take on the middle class and its relation to bureaucracy and why you think it's so important?
Sure. There's no official definition of middle class, but it's something that Americans hold dear, and most Americans think of themselves that way. But if you look at kind of no matter how you think about the middle class, it's in deep, deep trouble. So one example is the share of income of the total the nation produces that goes to people in the middle, 60%. That's at about just a record low now. For other ways of thinking about the median income, sort of the person in the dead center, their income has been basically stagnant for decades. They haven't gone up even as the economy has gone up. And what that means is not only you have lots of people who are struggling, even as there's the potential for them to be doing much better, I think it also has much larger effects on things we also care about, like mobility or the quality of our democracy. So we have a situation right now where I think our American democracy is in deep trouble, where the wealthy have exaggerated influence and the middle class are often ignored, most people's opinions and attitudes. And so we have a government that does the bidding far too often of those who have the money and not enough of the general public, which is what a democracy is supposed to do.
Mm-hmm. So just like, if you could you elaborate a little bit more on what, how you think the middle class currently, what their relationship to government is, I guess, because you do talk about this idea of checking on bureaucracy. And I'm just wondering how do you think the wealthy are, using their, capital to, influence government in the status quo, if that makes any sense?
Sure. So the wealthy have significant opportunity to influence what politicians and government does. Their money gives them tremendous access to politicians. It might not directly buy a vote, but it buys an audience and an opportunity to sort of have their case presented. It also influences what politicians do on a daily basis, which most of what they do, or much of what they do, is spend time talking to rich people trying to raise money. So they hear a particular set of interests that the wealthy have, and some of the attitudes of the wealthy are quite supportive of the things the general public wants, but other things that the wealthy want are not. And so at the time, middle class, on the other hand, the way they can try to influence the vote, the politicians, for the most part, is by participating in politics through voting, protesting, and the like. They have a much harder time getting access to their elected officials. And their individual vote doesn't actually even mean that much. It's sort of only when they're really together in a bunch of them then they have a chance. So there's this sort of disproportionate influence that's been going on, and our political system allows a lot more of it than most others. We allow more money in politics, for example, than most other countries. More money spent on lobbying than other places and the like. And so that gets to a place where we see that what government does, and you can measure that by lots of different ways. There's surveys of what the public thinks and what the wealthy think, and then what actually government does, and more oftentimes it does what the wealthy want, not what the public does. But you can also just look around and open your eyes and you see, hey, we're cutting taxes on the wealthy, but we're not funding roads and bridges that the public wants. Why is that?
Yeah.
Well, the middle class doesn't have enough influence right now.
Thank you. So you bring up this whole idea of campaign and wealthy influence. So in the 2016 election with Bernie Sanders, we saw him kind of running on the whole idea of the 1% and campaign finance reform and Citizens United. What is your whole take on that, and how does your view on it differ from the sort of Bernie Sanders view that we've seen in the media?
So no, it's not that different than the Bernie Sanders view. It also wasn't that different than the Donald Trump view, that the wealthy have captured American politics, and government too often does their bidding. But I think there's another element here that is also important to highlight that also is happening at the same time, is so as inequality has risen and the wealthy have most of the money and the middle class has struggled, that's affected some broad things about how the middle class think and act and feel in most people. So, for example, trust in society has fallen very sharply. The U.S. used to be the most trusting society in the world. We would think other people would be like us and do other things. But as we've become more unequal, we've moved apart and think other people are different and we don't trust them, which means that things like political polarization, we don't think the other side is worth listening to or hearing out. We're going to fight more. We're going to fight more, you know, vehemently about issues. It also means we are less willing to participate in politics. We think our view doesn't hold any weight. And so you can especially see that in things like voting in the midterm elections. That's been a long-term decline. So it's, yes, the rich capturing, but it's also affecting broader society as well in the way the broader society relates to politics.
So do you have any sort of, idea of what you think reform for income inequality looks like the ideal reform for it? Because everyone knows that there's a huge, income inequality is huge, but it's also increasing. I know that's a loaded question.
No, it's very big, and in some ways I think this is the challenge that U.S. society, but also most advanced democracies now face, because inequality has been increasing around much of the world. What do we do about it? And to my mind, the big things we need to do, a lot of them is sort of part of the debate. Yes, we need to increase taxes on the wealthy a little bit more. We need to spend a little bit more on public services, things like better health care and the like, better education. But a big thing we have to do, and this is not really where the debate is now, is strengthen labor unions. And I think that's so important is because what labor unions do is they give power to workers at the workplace, which means they can negotiate for higher wages, but also gives them some power in politics because, as I was talking about earlier, ordinary people don't have much political power on their own. They only have power when they come together. And that would be true even if you reduce the influence of money in politics. And so you have to find ways of bringing people together in an organized manner, and labor unions are about the only way we've successfully done that in the past. So I think we can modernize and reform the way we deal with labor unions, but we need to sort of strengthen them so people have a voice to negotiate for higher wages and they have a voice to talk to elected officials.
That's interesting that you bring up that idea of unions. Michael Tanner, actually, in his some of his, counters to income inequality being a dominant narrative in terms of democracy, he brought up this idea that 14 of the top 25 spenders during the 2012 election were unions. So do you think that that is sufficient, or do you think there's still an issue with that? What is your sort of take on that? Because it's used from the other side.
I think it's a naive understanding of, so yes, there are some individual unions that spend a fair amount of money. They represent 2 million people or more, and they happen to spend about as much as some of the, a rich individual donor. Overall, if you look at the amount of money that business contributes, compared to labor on in political campaigns, it's 10 to 1 in favor of business. And that's just what we can see, because but things like Citizens United have made it much easier for corporations, as well as unions, but especially corporations, to hide what's spent and rich individuals. Then there's lobbying.
Mm-hmm.
Corporations outspend unions about 30 to 1 on lobbying.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no actual compare, and that's at the federal level. State spending is even more distorted than what I've described.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, unions still have some voice and
mm-hmm.
still have some degree of influence, and some individual ones spend a good amount of money on politics. But compared to the larger story of what's going on, it's incredibly small. Unions today represent the smallest share of the private sector workforce they have since they were basically legalized in the 1930s. They represent 6% of workers. The
mm-hmm.
high, they represented over a third of the workforce. So the idea now that they're the smallest they've ever been and they have some great influence
mm-hmm.
is almost laughable. Yes, in particular, you always find an isolated example where they had some degree
yeah.
of influence, but in a larger society, they are washed out by the wealthy and corporations.
Yeah. So then I guess my follow-up to that is because they're like unions are like for teachers, like you have to join a union and for things like that. So I'm wondering, like, how do you propose to make unions be a more, like, I guess, prominent voice in like the political field? Like, or I guess.
Sure. So one small thing, you never are forced to join a union. You can be forced in some cases to pay fees
yes.
for when they have a, mm-hmm. have a collective bargaining reason, but you can't be forced to join them. You can be forced to pay the costs of their bargaining.
Yeah.
In certain instances. But bigger picture, I think we need to make a couple big reforms to the way we bargain. In the U.S., we're very strange compared to the rest of the world. We bargain at a really small level, like a part of a firm. Think of like the butchers at a supermarket. We would bargain at that level, whereas most other countries find ways to bargain at a whole industry-wide so that all supermarkets, for example, would have a wage scale. So what you do there, what's better about that economically is that all workers who have similar skills get similar pay. That means the firms aren't at a disadvantage if they get unionized,
mm-hmm.
which is so that, and you also get broader coverage. You have more people being covered. So that would be a big move to change how we bargain.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is, I think we actually need to provide some incentives to encourage people to join
mm-hmm.
unions. If you look around the world, the only place that has sort of stable union density is where there is what you say a selective incentive to join a union, meaning in most countries' cases they get lower unemployment insurance costs when they join a union. And so I think we need to do those kind of things to encourage people to join
mm-hmm.
and to change the way you bargain to improve the situation.
Yeah. So then just like, I guess looking to the other side of this, what do you think is, I guess, like the strongest argument for the other side, and what is sort of your response to that?
I would say the best argument to the other side is, hey, we still have a democracy in the U.S. We're the most unequal advanced country in the world, but we still have a democracy.
Yeah.
And to my mind, that is fairly weak because it is basically holding us out as a lone example that's so different than the rest of the world, when generally the trends are when you become very unequal, it's hard to maintain a democracy. It also ignores sort of the theory of what goes on once you have a very unequal society that I've talked about.
Mm-hmm.
It's certainly possible we can hang on, but at a minimum you're starting to see real signs of weakness in our democracy. You know, international rankings show us slipping. You can also see it in how, you know, the fact that Trump, I think, is a good indication. Many of his supporters thought they were just rejecting the current class of sort of leaders, and they just wanted someone to sort of blow up the system. Or if you're an opponent of Trump's, you say, whoa, he's a massive danger to our democracy because he is a threat to all norms, he's racist, he's semi-fascist, and he was elected in part because of inequality, not like a direct result, but in part. So you have lots of people who are frustrated with stagnant wages. He said he was going to do something about that.
Mm-hmm.
He said he was going to, you know, reject the elites, something to do that about that. You also, as I talked about, inequality helps to lead to political polarization. You had people who were going to vote for him because that's what their party was, and no matter who or what the party leader was,
yeah.
that they were going to vote there. So, yeah, I think we have real signs of problems in the U.S. We're not that different than the rest of the world. And I think we're in for future trouble if we don't address inequality.
And do you think that the promotion of, like, trying to get unions to have more capital, I guess, and voice, do you think that has any sort of influence on, I guess, the political polarization that you've mentioned that is, like, a clear problem in the United States?
Could it, well, I think it could have an indirect and a direct. So the indirect would be that unions, stronger unions, would help reduce overall inequality, which I think, you know, would help reduce polarization. But also, unions, what they do is they actually bring people together, and when in sort of face-to-face interactions, which helps reduce, this is sort of, you know, I think debates by Alex de Tocqueville, ideas that when in face-to-face interactions help reduce your sort of animosity and makes you able to work together. So, for example, they're one of the most racially diverse organizations around. They have, you know, blacks, whites, Hispanics in relatively close proportions to the proportions in society, same with women and men. Also, even though, you know, they represent workers and the lower income folks, they have a pretty broad range of income earners. Think of LeBron James to a janitor, all union members. And so this is a group, and there's basically no other organization you can say all of those things about. Possibly some religious organizations are sort of the closest. But again, religious organizations can play an important role in politics, but that is not their, and also in the economy, but their primary role, religious organizations, is to be a moral and religious voice rather than a political or economic one.
So something brought up by, I guess, like the opposition and also even mentioned by Michael Tanner in his work is the idea that income inequality is just everyone is talking about it, but we should really be focusing on poverty. So what do you have to say to that? What is so important about income inequality itself and like the whole wealth gap that everyone calls it?
So one, I think they're just trying to distract from the issues. Poverty is an issue. It's certainly an issue. And we can do things to address it. Inequality on its own is important, primarily for its effect on democracy, but also for what it says about society as well. So how do folks get to be very, very rich? Some people provide useful goods and services, but some people rig the system for their benefit so that that's how they get to be at the top, which makes it frustrating for those at the bottom who see the way to advance rather than doing good hard work is to further rig the system for themselves. So I think it has a larger corrosive effect on society as well. You also see, so other people talk about income mobility, the ability to rise above what your parents, you know, were, and that's sort of a core American dream idea. The research, I think, is pretty clear that countries that have less economic inequality have greater economic mobility. Same with regions across the country. Regions with lower inequality have greater economic mobility. It's true that there's not a clear time trend of decreasing mobility, but that's in my view, in part because it'll take another generation before we see the effects of extreme inequality. So most likely, economic inequality also reduces mobility. So we have all these other important things that inequality, you know, harms. So yes, we should tackle it on its own. And to my mind, that is mostly about raising people up, but it is also about reducing the ability of the wealthy to rig the game so that they further benefit. So as I started, you know, inequality is about some of the super rich getting rich, but it's also the middle class going nowhere recently. So there's plenty of room to improve the condition of the vast majority of American society and reduce inequality that way as well.
So I guess just in terms of like going kind of, you were talking about the middle class. So, and like, so what, I guess, when you talk about, like, when you're stressing the middle class, do you see the, I guess, the avenue for them to be more, I guess, have a voice in politics is through unions? Do you think that it also comes with just, like, expanding that to have that sort of mobility that makes any sense.
So I think you have a voice in politics through lots of different means.
Mm-hmm.
Your ability to vote is
mm-hmm.
a central piece of that,
mm-hmm.
and we need to increase and make it easier for people to vote. But there's also a very clear relationship between higher income people are more likely to vote. Middle in the middle, poor at the bottom. More education also makes
mm-hmm.
people more likely to vote. So we can boost people's income and we can boost their education and encourage
yep.
them to vote. But then there's broader participation in society, and that's things like talking to your elected official, joining organizations.
Mm-hmm.
Unions, I think, as I mentioned, were a key piece of that, but there's been a broader decline. You know, probably Robert Putnam, sort of this idea that we are far less likely to join any kind of organization
yeah.
and come
yeah.
together. And so we can boost membership in all kinds of organizations, which
mm-hmm.
to my mind partly is about reducing inequality to
yeah.
encourage those coming together. And so unions are in some ways one avenue, but they provide the larger benefits of organization, voting, and then helping people pay attention during
yeah.
the active work of governance. So it's
mm-hmm.
you have to hold politicians accountable. You have to say you do X, Y, and Z, and then make sure that thing's enforced.
Mm-hmm.
And that requires organized people. And
yeah.
You got to come together into some organization that can do that.
Yeah. I think that's pretty much time. But
Great.
Do you have any last thoughts you want to add to anything? Or
No, I'm thrilled that you all are doing this. I think
mm-hmm.
this is a very important topic to be covering, and the fact
Excellent.
That you are having debate is a useful and important part of a democratic society.
Yeah.
So I think it's really valuable, and I'm glad to be part of it.
Thank you. Thank you so much.